Hello and welcome into this edition of the Golf Show Podcast with Rex and Lavel. Folks, I didn't think it was possible, but the final round of the American Express presented the possibility of must-see TV. Even Rex, with 50 million folks tuned in to the NFL Conference Championships. Yes, of course, it turned out to be yet another Scottie Scheffler rout, the 20th win of his incredible career. But it wasn't a tight back nine, but the week still turned out better than expected, didn't it?
I was sort of moving around the house doing a lot of things. So I actually listened to the final round on Sirius XM radio. And I think I counted, or I stopped counting, actually, Fred Albers. I think I stopped counting at like 20 times when they said, well, they're going to need Scottie Scheffler to come back to him. They're going to need Scottie Scheffler to make some mistakes. And the irony is he actually made one big mistake on the 17th hole and it didn't even matter.
Didn't even matter.
Lead doubles it, ends up only winning by four. So I will say this, and I think you and I tried to figure out a way to stretch this topic out last week when we were on Golf Day today together. The idea being that what, if anything, stops Scottie Scheffler? And I think I actually ventured down the very, very sorry path of pointing out that he doesn't particularly like Birdie Fest. If you look at over the course of his career, he's only won with a score of 30 under par or more once in those 20 PGA Tour wins. That was last year at the CJ Cup. He likes to sort of grind away. He likes to hit fairways. He likes to hit greens. He likes to make sure that a par is a good score. He likes those types of tests, which is why he plays so well in the major championships. Never mind. I mean, had it not been for the double and some other things coming down the stretch, he could have finished easily at 30 under par this time around. I think it's an indication of where his mind was this particular offseason. We talked a lot coming into this year after what he went through last year. The injuries set him back. He didn't get a chance to work on the things that he want to, didn't get a chance to be as comfortable as he wants to be coming in to this year. We know he's a creature of habit. And my guess is that was the entire focus for the offseason. There weren't many flaws in the game. But I will say, and we're going to have Todd Lewis on. He was our boots on the ground in a little while. I want to get his thoughts with this. We always compare him to Tiger because by this time, this was his 151st PGA Tour start and he got his 20th win. That is a Tiger-esque number. You can look it up. Like, this is just basic facts. I hate comparing anyone to Tiger. It's always unfair to Tiger. It's always unfair to the person you're comparing him to. But in this particular case, it's really the only comp. And I'm going to point out, like, he's starting to do Tiger-esque things. I think we had this conversation after he won the BMW last year, championship in the playoffs, and he chips in from 80-something feet on the 17th hole. That was a Tiger moment. If he'd have fist-pumped and he was wearing red and black, I'd have been like, yep, that guy. He looks just like Tiger Woods back in his prime. He had a couple of those moments today at the American Express on Sunday. I mean, the wedge shot he hit on 12, the wedge shot he hit on 13. I mean, he had so many shots today that either were going to go in or danced around the hole, setting up pretty easy birdie attempts. I think it just speaks to the expectations for him this year. It's not as though this was going to be a bad course for him. It's not as though he was going to show up with a lot of rust, but this was impressive.
I knew you were excited to talk about the Amex because you just went 3 minutes uninterrupted.
Did I?
About how great the Scottie Scheffler win was. I think it's very, very reasonable because there's a lot to get into, not just with this round, but what it means for a season, what it means in the vast context. And that, so I sort of zoomed out, Rex, because I was really excited for the final group to go off and see what Kim Blades Brown, the other two members of that group, because I was thinking that this is a prime example of what the PGA Tour can offer. And what the PGA Tour really offers that was on display in the final group at PGA West was historical context. And by that, I mean Scottie is playing against the record books. Scottie, as you mentioned, was trying to become the first player since Tiger Woods to win 20 times before the age of 30. Conversely, Blades Brown, the 18-year-old, was trying to become the youngest winner on the PGA Tour in the modern era, the first teenager to win on the PGA Tour since Jordan Spieth, who has obviously gone on to what will become eventually a Hall of Fame career. It is being played, this final round, on a golf course that we all know, we all love. It's had some memorable moments. David Duval's 59 certainly comes to mind. Yes, it can obviously be toothless when the weather is 70 degrees and sunny and there's very little wind, but there's still enough trouble lurking that can swallow you up. Blades Brown found that on 5. Scottie Scheffler, even though it didn't matter, found that on 17. And so I think in like the big picture, it's not just a PGA Tour tagline. It's not just a cutesy commercial that the tour puts together. Like what the PGA Tour on a weekly basis really has to offer is context and tradition and legacy and history. That's what these guys are always playing against. It's easy to contextualize. It's easy to look at statistically. And I think it's easy, Rex, to even look at two players who are at vastly different poles of their career. Scottie Scheffler trying to go down as one of the all-time greats, and Blades Brown really trying to announce his bad intentions to the rest of the golf world. All that was on display in the final round of the Amex.
And we had this conversation last week after the Sony, and I feel like having the exact same conversation today. When scarcity and the Future Competitions Committee and everything that Brian Rolapp and Tiger Woods want to do with the PGA Tour schedule, when that was conceptual, let's say towards the end of last year, Tiger Woods talked at his Hero World Challenge in December. We got a little bit of clarity, not a lot of details, but a little bit more clarity. When it was conceptual, I think you and I both could probably sit down, and we love doing the blank piece of paper. We love doing the experiment of, yeah, let's come up with the best 2025 event schedule. Let's get the right flow to the schedule. Let's go to the right markets. Let's go to the right golf courses. And along with that, sort of unspoken throughout all of this, is the idea that there's going to be some collateral damage. I think both you and I kind of sort of came to the conclusion last week, it's probably going to be a Sony Open or the American Express, or we can keep going down a list of tournaments. But when you actually sit down and you watch these tournaments, like we have the last 2 weeks, it dawns on you they would be missed. Even against football, even against the juggernaut that is the NFL, PGA Tour was a second screen experience. It was a smaller screen. I understand that. I'm not sitting here trying to make the argument that it was somehow pulled more of an audience than the NFL did with the conference championship games on Sunday, but it was obviously a second screen experience. You had Scottie Scheffler, the world number one, doing really special things. And to your point, you had an 18-year-old on the cusp of doing really special things. It's hard to wrap your mind around how difficult it's going to be going forward, if we do get to the point of scarcity that we think we're going to get to. And even though it's going to be tough love, even though I think Brian Rolapp's probably going to do a good job of selling the membership that this is best for the PGA Tour, to lose events like this, that's going to be tough.
I think the argument, though, Rex, could be, okay, instead of burying this on a conference championship Sunday, when concurrently the Patriots were playing the Broncos, why not spotlight this at a better time in the schedule? Why not do it during the off week before the Super Bowl? Why not do it after the Super Bowl? Why not put it on a place in the schedule where it can really shine? You had a huge field. It's not like it was scarcity in terms of the number of players, but I think the whole point of a schedule remake is to really highlight how great these players are, how great these tournaments are, how great the courses are, and just bring in more TV audience that way, instead of just conceding, okay, 40 to 50 million people are going to watch football, but we're going to do our own little thing in the California desert.
Well, and I will fast forward a little bit to next week at Torrey Pines, because there won't be any NFL going up against that. And you have an amazing field with Brooks Koepka making his first start since leaving LIV Golf. Like, all the storylines will be there as well. So it's a solid start for the PGA Tour, and we're going to get into the DP World Tour in a moment. So it's a solid start for golf all the way around. And I tend to agree with you. You're right. If somehow you just pick the American Express up and you put it in a date where it wasn't going head-to-head with the two conference championship games, yes, that would have been much better. Yes, it would have probably gotten a much bigger audience. It could have been an entertainment element all in and of itself. However, that's not where we are right now, and I can't imagine how it gets moved to a spot that would be better.
I would say for week two of the PGA Tour season, for week three now coming up with the Farmers Insurance Open, pretty good. Chock full of storylines, great winners, Chris Goddard winning in Sony, now Scottie Scheffler. Let's get into that, Rex, because you and I were co-hosting golf today, and yes, we got all of your fan mail. We certainly appreciate all the kind messages. We know that it was the best show that they've had on Golf Channel over the past couple of years, you and I being together. One of the segments we did, though, Rex, when we were talking specifically about Amex week, was what are your expectations for this week? And I think we're going to need to burn the tape, because I said I don't expect him to win. And the reason why I did not expect Scottie Scheffler to win was, I think, multifaceted. One, it's the biggest field, 156 players on the PGA Tour schedule. I know the Scottish Open has that as well, but it's really difficult to win. We mentioned sort of the off-season, early season rust for a lot of players, so maybe not everyone is firing. And when you get into these birdie fests, these 25 to 30 under par winners, there's a lot of variance. And that's why you've seen historically this tournament, the American Express, produces as many long shots as any tournament on the PGA Tour, because any player who has this prerequisite skill set can get hot over 4 days with the putter and fill it up and shoot 25 to 30 under par. And yet, Scottie Scheffler still pulled it off. So what signs did you see over these 4 days at PGA West that lead you to believe 2026 could actually be better than 2025? which statistically was better than 2024.
I'm going to be a little counterintuitive with this answer because I'm going to say, even though it was a wildly successful week for Scotty, as we pointed out, wins by four, and that's with a double bogey on the 71st hole. There's no way, there's no caveats, there's no asterisks, there's no way to sort of downplay this. But if you look at what he did statistically, it's a normal performance, but it wasn't dominant like we have seen out of him in the past, where not only is he the best ball striker in the field, he's the best ball striker in the field by two, three, four strokes sometime. This time around, he finished fourth in strokes gained off the tee. He finished fourth in strokes gained tee to green. Very, very good. Not taking anything away from it, but not exactly the dominant performance that we would have anticipated. And he wasn't all that great on the greens either. He finished 19th in the field on the greens and 56th in fairways hit, which is something when you're considering you're playing golf in a dome. I know. We're picking nits here, as you like to say. And this is just one of those avenues that I say all this just to point out that I don't know what the cap could possibly be here, because outside of someone else stepping up to his level, and you would imagine that throughout the course of this season, there's going to be a Rory or a Xander or Ricky Fowler had a good week, or you can keep going down the list of players who have a good week and certainly make a game of it when it comes to Scotty. But there's just nothing in his game that's shaky right now. If this is his statistical start, if this is where you want to point to and say, well, he wasn't at his best and he still won by four strokes, that's tough to make an argument that anyone is going to be able to. I think it was Xander 2 years ago that said climbing, getting to the top of Mount Scotty is going to be tough.
It certainly is going to be tough because Scotty has never started sharper. Like, there were already signs this week that this could be a special week, a special season. He shot 63 in the opening round. That's the lowest score he's ever shot to start a PGA Tour season. He won in his 2026 debut. It's the first time he's done that in a season. So I think that's really a nod to, as you mentioned, his preparation and sort of the seamless run out that he had from the Hero World Challenge to this tournament. There were no setbacks. There was no injury issues. There was fine weather in Dallas that he was able to prepare and practice accordingly. You mentioned the strokes gained data. There was no strokes gained data on all three courses this week. We didn't have it for the first two rounds, but you look at what he did putting wise, he only needed 26 putts each of the first two rounds and shot 63 and 64. Scottie Scheffler has now won four of his last seven starts dating to last year. And so when you look, I think not just what he did statistically, I think on the greens is where he really stood out to me. Obviously, he threw a couple darts in there, but he really filled it up, as I mentioned, over those first couple days as well. And so when you look at what he did statistically, you couple that with the context that this tournament is really difficult to win just because of some of the other factors. Like, that should be terrifying for the rest of the PGA Tour, that the best player won in this scenario. That usually doesn't happen at the Amex.
Earlier last week on Golf Central, Trip Eisenhower was doing, I think, his Tuesday headlines. And the first Tuesday headline was Scotty completes the career Grand Slam at Shinnecock. And at the time, I thought, well, that's a good headline. It's a cute little headline. I don't know how he could possibly be wrong. I know it's the U.S. Open, to your point. It's a big field. It's one of the biggest fields of the year. And it's a lot of things can go wrong. Golf can golf sometimes. And you have no idea how it's going to play out. But from this point going forward, I would have a hard time not making him a favorite at an event he shows up for.
Oh God, yeah. I mean, like a prohibitive favorite, like a.
I don't know if I'm willing to do. Favorite. I don't know if I'm willing. Oh, you're going to do odds now. I don't know that I'm willing to go as far as Scotty versus the field quite yet. That was the Tiger game back in the day, but it's pretty close. And you're right. It 3-1, 4-1, somewhere around there. Every single time he shows up, unless something happens, like he's going to have to show me something the other way. There's an issue with his game, like suddenly putting doesn't come as easy or as natural, or he starts struggling with the driver, whatever the case may be. It's just not there right now.
Yeah. What I think was really interesting this particularly, because look, he does play a couple of these birdie fest tournaments throughout the year. He's going to be playing another one next week in Phoenix. He plays the Nelson to support, what was he, 30 something under par when he won that golf tournament last year. Those are not the tournaments where he's playing offense, where I think his advantage is really heightened. Where Scotty really shines is when he's able to minimize his mistakes, where everyone else is making bogeys or worse and falling down the leaderboard, where he just sort of drops anchor and plods along and all of a sudden just sort of methodically plods his way to the golf course. And then you look at 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 shot margin of victory. What I find really hard to beat Scotty in those types of scenarios is that not every shot is stiffed. And he certainly did plenty of that at the Amex, right? He had eight approaches inside 4 feet in the final round. He's going to be tough to beat regardless. But what he does better than anybody else is he makes the proper shot over and over and over again. If there's water left, he's missing right. If there's water up by the green on the right side, he's missing on the left. He's always steering away from trouble, even though he said that he didn't have complete control of his golf ball in that final round. He has such a tidy short game. He almost chipped in multiple times in the final round to what is really keeping the momentum, but also capitalizing on the par fives when he's just off the greens as well. There's really like a relentlessness to his game that I find beautiful to watch, and it's easy to appreciate if you really know, understand, and play this game, because those are really difficult things to do. You can have a great strategy. I know exactly, Rex, what I want to do when I step out on the golf course. I know how I should play. The key, of course, is actually implementing that game plan and executing that game plan. So Sky doesn't just do it, you know, strategically. He's also doing it technically with a proficiency we haven't seen since Tiger.
It's the execution. You're right. Not only can he execute the right shot, but he does it at the right moment every single time. I'll point out the way he played the 72nd hole after coming off of, again, very inexplicable tee shot on the 17th hole. But he put the ball exactly where it needed to be, down the right side, just in the rough on the right side. So far away from the water, it was never even in question. And then he missed the green right, probably ended up getting a bad bounce. All of those things he does over and over again. You can give examples for, well, he didn't make any bogeys the first two rounds, so it's kind of hard to point to any time he actually even got in trouble or even was close to making a bogey. But it's what he does when he's at his best. And you're right. At the U.S. Open is when you would imagine he would have the greatest advantage over everyone else in the field, because he has this magical ability to pull off the right shot at the absolute right time.
Yeah, if you take out that Pinehurst U.S. Open, which we can all agree was a little bit different. He has a pretty stout U.S. Open record. He's already given himself a couple of chances.
And he said in the moment that he wasn't ready for that particular test that was Pinehurst. It was a little bit of a different U.S. Open test.
Yeah, I think it's easy to throw out that one. How about, Rex, the other protagonist? No offense to Siwoo Kim, but the other protagonist that all of us were keeping a close eye on Sunday. And that, of course, was Blades Brown. As I mentioned, he was trying to make history. No player in the modern era had won a PGA Tour event at the age of 18. Jordan Spieth, remember, in the 2013 John Deere Classic, was 19. But after starting in a tie for second place, Blaze Brown, after a final round 74, eventually faded into a tie for 18th. What did young Blades show you on Sunday? What can we glean from his performance?
A lot of resilience. I had a chance to cover Blades at this tournament last year when he made his PGA Tour debut as a 17-year-old at the time. And I walked away incredibly impressed with everything about his game and his personality and how he just seems to be really calm on the golf course. And sometimes I think when young players end up in positions like this, things speed up. And there could have been a little bit of that on Sunday, being paired with the world number one. Someone actually texted me on Saturday afternoon asking about being in the Amex, and because you play the first three rounds with amateurs, that helped Blades. And in retrospect, yeah, it probably did.
Like Dunlap effect a couple years ago, yeah.
Yes. And I think if you're an outgoing type personality, I think if you're the type of person that likes to sort of get your mind off of golf in between shots, it 100% is going to help out. And then you get dropped in a Sunday pairing with a chance to win on the PGA Tour as an 18-year-old next to that cyborg. And all you can do is sit and watch him do exactly what we just talked about, hit robot shot after robot shot after robot shot. It can get a little rattling. So I think that factors into this a little bit. I think the idea he was playing his eight consecutive tournament round in 8 days, going back to the Korn Ferry Tour event last weekend. I know he's 18. I know it was a private jet from the Bahamas to Palm Springs. I know all of the things that factor into it. It's exhausting. Like, I think Tiger Woods put it best, like in the middle of his career, talking about how stressful it is just to be in contention on the PGA Tour. Forget about winning, just being in contention. The part that probably impresses me the most, and this goes back to our conversation last week about Chris Goddard when he won the Sony Open. Three PGA Tour wins, all on different golf courses, off to a great start to his career. But I think both of you and I agree to a certain level that he doesn't have a 100% complete game. There's parts of his game that clearly he needs to get better at. I think his distance control with his wedges was one of the things. He doesn't seem to have a really good off-speed game. Looking at Blades Brown play this week and last week, as a matter of fact, he doesn't seem to have any holes in his game. I've talked with Justin Parson, his swing coach, about this on numerous occasions. Like, what do you work on? Like, I wouldn't have a clue where you start when that's what he's able to do, the skill set that he brings to the table. I think the only thing that's missing at this point is just the experience, which I think it will make this Sunday go so far for him.
Yeah, I think you make a great point. Like, he has such a simple, efficient, repeatable golf swing honed by one of the greatest swing coaches that we have in Justin Parsons. He's very accurate, and that was on display at PGA West. He has above average distance. He has 180-ish ball speed, which is right in line with the Scotty Scheffler, despite giving up, what, 6 or 7 inches in height to Scotty Scheffler. Obviously, Blaze Brown on Sunday made the huge mistake on 5. You have all of Indio to the right, and he ended up pulling it left and essentially had to re-tee on a par 5 and made double, and that was just about it. You look at what he did on the greens, that was probably the most disappointing to him. He had, I believe, 28 feet worth of putts in the front 9 when he really needed it to keep pace with Scotty Scheffler. Ended up with just 45 feet worth of putts made in the final round in general. Obviously, he's going to learn a ton about this, but the reason why I was so giddy about this story, Rex, is that you and I are nerds. We're golf geeks. We get into the strokes gained data. We watch every single tournament, watch basically every single shot these are playing during the core PGA Tour season. But this story, like, broke contain, and it passed the Sports Center test. And by that, I mean it captured the attention of the greater sports world. And that's always really exciting for someone who is incredibly insular and is incredibly detail-oriented in our little world. Because what is a known quantity in the sports world? Nothing is more alluring than a precocious talent. Everyone loves it. If you are young and you are talented, that is going to get a lot of people's attention. And I think this Blaze Brown story, Rex, sort of took on a life of its own. I don't think necessarily because of, but I think it's shown an even greater spotlight on it because of the Michael Lissasso news that you and I talked about on the Midweek podcast last week on YouTube, where here's a kid in Blaze Brown who did not take what could be perceived as the easy way out, right? He could have obviously commanded a large sum of money and bolted to live, played that for a couple of years to start his career. And there's nothing wrong with that, but he didn't. Instead, what Blaze Brown has done is he has been grinding on the PGA Tour. This was the 10th start that he's made on the PGA Tour. He has fully exempt status on the Korn Ferry Tour for 2026, which he earned based off special temporary status that he had in 2025, which is receiving sponsor exemptions, playing his way, playing well enough to then keep it rolling. So he had a limited starts for 2025. This is obviously not a perfect system, right? You can't have a meritocracy if you're also receiving handouts. And to be clear, sure, Blaze Brown was in the American Express based on a handout and a sponsor exemption. But the point is that you still have to capitalize on those opportunities. Blaze Brown to this point has, I think, pretty successfully building out a career on the Korn Ferry Tour. And now, at least for 3 days, really made a name for himself at the American Express and had a good head start on his 2026 PGA Tour season.
And I like the fact you used the word precocious, because you go back, he's about to shoot 59. He has an opportunity to do this. And they showed him on SportsCenter playing rock, paper, scissors with someone, a kid that was just outside the ropes, that I call him a kid. He probably wasn't that much younger than Blaze, if we're being honest. I mean, Blaze just graduated from high school 2 weeks ago. So it's not as though, I think that shows a level of freedom that you don't get from Scotty Scheffler or really anyone else on tour. So you're absolutely right. He is an easy sell as a star. There is one word of warning, and this kind of came up last year, and I had this conversation with Justin Parsons, his swing coach, about it. They want him to play on the PGA Tour. Blades, everyone around him wants him to play on the PGA Tour. Perfectly understandable. The opportunity right now is on the Korn Ferry Tour, and this worked out really well. And I'm glad to see he had a solid week. This is his best finish in a PGA Tour event, his first top 10 finish in a PGA Tour event. But I would still counter and say, to your point, in the true meritocracy that is the PGA Tour, focus on the Korn Ferry Tour this year. You're a really good player, and it should take you probably 4 or 5 starts to lock up your card going into next year. And if you continue to play like you did this week, you're going to end up winning 3 and get a Battlefield promotion. Anyway, that's your best path. Trying to bounce back and forth and doing what you're doing this week, playing 8 consecutive days, probably isn't the best formula for success, would be my only warning.
Yeah, I think that's fair, just from a perspective of wanting to gain experience, to learn how to win, to be a touring professional for an entire year and not just sort of being scattershot of where am I going to play this week? Am I going to be in a Monday qualifier? Am I going to get a sponsor exemption? If I play well, do I keep it rolling? Just like the level of certainty you would have of committing to a schedule, I think could be very important for a player who is essentially just 18 and a half years old. I will say, Rex, to that point, it was a very costly last four holes for Blades Brown, making a pair of bogeys. Did not finish inside the top 10. Had he finished inside the top 10, he would be playing this week at the Farmers Insurance Open. That did not happen. He also, Rex, by making bogey on the 72nd hole, lost some non-member FedEx Cup points, which could play a factor in his status at the end of the season, because that's sort of a running list as well and measuring it against the 2025 performer. So, you know, obviously he would have liked to finish as high as possible. Obviously he'd like to be playing this week at Torrey Pines. It could be a blessing in disguise, playing with Scotty, learning what happened, sort of diagnosing what went wrong in that final round, applying it to Korn Ferry Tour, where again, he could earn his PGA Tour card outright that way and not necessarily relying on sponsor exemptions. All right. After this break, we have our Boots on the Ground segment. Todd Lewis is going to be joining us from the American Express to talk about Scotty, Blades Brown, and Brooks Koepka's return. Stick with us. And we're pleased to be joined for this Boots on the Ground segment by Golf Channel insider Todd Lewis. And T-Lew, first of all, thanks so much for joining us. You've covered a lot of these Scotty Scheffler victories. What was unique about this one?
Well, I think winning in his season debut, I think that's something he's never done. And I know it's something he's never done. I think that's pretty significant in the fact that he's going to set a tone now, it seems like, for the rest of the year. But it seems like that tone was set less than 4 years ago when he won for the very first time at the WM Phoenix Open. But I think this gives him some early momentum. If he was lacking any confidence, which I don't think he was, but if he was, he's got that back. But I mean, what we saw on Sunday was him grabbing the lead and running away. And I think a lot of that has to do with obviously his command of his game. But I think a little bit has to do with intimidation too, because when players see him get the lead and start going away from them, they feel like they're playing for second. And I felt that was the case on Sunday.
I want to get into the intimidation factor and really how this impacted the 18-year-old that was in that last group with him, Blades Brown. Before we get to that, you did some awesome work last week as the Boots on the Ground for Golf Channel throughout the week. And you talked about Scotty experimenting with drivers during the offseason. Where do you think his head was coming into this? Because we go back to last year when he was set back because of injury. It doesn't seem like he had any setbacks this time around, and he came in very hungry. Is that the way you read it?
Yeah, he was sharp, very sharp. He was testing the new driver that his manufacturer put out. And I think he's pretty close to putting that driver in the bag. Might see it in the bag at Scottsdale. But it just wasn't quite ready where he wanted it. So just a little bit off. It was, but I think that's going to be corrected. But outside of that, I mean, he went straight through all of his preparation, all of his routines, seemed to be complete control of his emotions and his game. It's interesting, Jason Day, after his play on Sunday, and let's not forget, he's a major champion. He was a world number one player. He talked about what you're exactly mentioning, Rex, and the fact that Scotty doesn't take it easy. He doesn't cruise. He comes out with hunger, desire to get better. And we know how dominant he has been the last 4 years, and he wants to be even better than that. And I know we make comparisons of Scotty to Tiger, but I think that's significant. That hunger that he has, and that not resting on your laurels, even though you're the best on the planet. I mean, that's very similar to the way Tiger was, and I think that's the attitude that Scotty Scheffler brings to the golf course in every event he plays.
Yeah, I want to expand on that, T-Lew, because when we did the 2025 recap podcast a couple of months ago, we talked about one of the storylines for this year was who was going to step up and challenge Scotty. Was it going to be Rory? Was it going to be Xander? Was it going to be Ludwig and the like? Is Scotty's stiffest competition actually the record books, the history books? Is he just competing against the ghosts of golf's past, and that's what is really driving him at this point?
I mean, some of that is true, I think, right? But I think a lot of it is him competing against himself. I think that he doesn't want to be the 2026 Scotty. Doesn't want to be the 2025 Scotty. And the 2025 Scotty was pretty good. He wants to be better than that. So I think that's who he's competing against. It's like, yes, I've won 20 times in less than 4 years. And yes, I have four major championships, but you know what? I won 25, 30, 35, 40, and 10, 15 major championships. So I think he's competing against himself more than he is the record book. And I think he pushes himself a lot more than we know.
You made the comment that maybe we're starting to compare him to Tiger. And I think throughout Scottie's career, even as he got on this incredible run, he was doing it differently. At least it seemed like it was different from the outside. He seemed like he was much more methodical. He didn't have those Tiger moments like we saw throughout Tiger's career. That kind of changed last year at the BMW. Remember what he did on 17 on Sunday when he chipped in from 82 feet? That felt like a Tiger moment. I felt like today, Scottie Scheffler, his approach shot on 12, and he had a couple of other wedges that were just unbelievable. Like they were Tiger-esque. Does it feel like he's almost getting a little bit more flair to his game when he's in these heated moments that he's almost challenging himself to pull off these shots?
Yeah, I mean, I see that. I've actually seen it the last couple of years. I mean, I know it's boring. It's, you know, down the middle of the fairway, 10 to 15 feet, you know, that kind of thing.
We should all be so unfortunate, Todd.
I know. I agree. I think his short game does not get mentioned enough. I mean, we saw that on Sunday. I mean, he wasn't spot on, but his short game was phenomenal. And, you know, I feel like Tiger was the best clutch putter in history, at least that I've seen. Might make the argument that Scottie Scheffler is kind of trending to be the most clutch short game player, maybe in the history of golf. You know, I'm not saying he is there now, but he sure is speeding on that highway for sure. He can pull off a remarkable shot when he wants to, for sure, but he'd rather not. He'd rather play that boring golf that we were talking about.
Todd, what did you mean when you said that Scottie has that intimidation factor? I think when a lot of people think of intimidation or fear tactics or scare tactics, we think of Tiger and his icy glare. Scottie does it very differently, but how do you think Scottie's competitors view him when he's atop a leaderboard like he was on Sunday at the American Express?
If he has a lead of 2 to 3 shots, they're playing for second. I feel like that's what players think. I actually heard that at Port Rush last year when he had that significant lead heading into that final round. I mean, I talked to players Saturday night, and they wouldn't say we're playing for second.
Rory said inevitable that Scottie was going to win.
Yeah, then there you go. But they all know, and you know, there's a reason why. He's got 10 consecutive wins on the PGA Tour with a solo 54-hole lead. They know that he is not going to make a mistake. And if it is, it is minor. And he's just not going to come backwards. You got to go get him. And, what's interesting is usually he has those leads on tough golf courses. This is a golf course, obviously, well, these golf courses that yields a lot of birdies. But he was still able to run away from everyone. There's something... It's hard to put my finger on this, but, you know, we've talked about him being such a unicorn and the fact that all the GOATs in all sports, whether it's Tiger, Tom Brady, Michael Jordan, they fed on that flair you talked about, the drama, the fact that they are the best. I mean, Scottie's the biggest in the game from a competition perspective, but he wants to be so small. And I think that humbleness, the players see that confidence combined with humility, they see. I mean, that is such a successful formula for Scottie Scheffler. And I'm not saying it's great for everyone, but for him, it's wonderful, and it is being noticed by players on tour.
Solid performance. I mean, just look at the leaderboard; it's pretty clear. But if you look at it statistically, it wasn't like we've seen from him in the past, where he is so much better than the rest of the field, at least tee to green, and with his iron play, with his ball striking. Not necessarily this time around. He was fourth off the tee, fourth tee to green, but he was well outside the top 20 when it comes to putting. He was well outside the top 20 when it comes to fairways hit. Did it feel like maybe he won with his B game?
I would say A minus game. There's not much difference between
A plus, B, A minus. My goodness,
you know, whatever.
Splitting hairs.
Obviously he didn't have a dominating performance, but it was pretty strong. And let's not forget, we're early in the season. Guys are still coming off a break. I think what was interesting, one of the most interesting comments that I heard from Scottie this year, and it's specific primarily to this tournament. There may be one or two on the PGA Tour like it, but the pressure you feel, from Scottie Scheffler's words, when you come and play here in the California desert, because you have to have to make a lot of birdies. Scotty said, you know, if I'm playing, let's say, Bay Hill or the South Course at Torrey Pines that they're going to play this upcoming week, you shoot even par, you're still in the tournament. You shoot even par here, and you have no shot at winning. So there is this pressure, this anxiousness to come out here and be aggressive and make a lot of birdies. And if you don't do it immediately and early, then, you know, you could be in trouble. He birdied 5 of his first 6 holes in this tournament. So I think that, you know, people think that these players come out here and it's like, oh, it's easy, man. What are you talking about? No, that's a lot of pressure to come out here and make sure that your foot is on the gas and that you're putting up an average of 65 or 66 to win this tournament.
Tilu, how about the other member of the final group that I think everyone was really excited to see? That was Blades Brown, the rising star going up against the undisputed star and the star who has dominated the sport over the past 4 years. What did you learn about Blades Brown this week that you didn't already know?
First time I've interacted with him at a PGA Tour event, at a tournament. First, I want to say he's very mature for his age. He's being mentored by Scott Stallings and Brant Snedeker, both 2 Tennessee guys. And they Blades plays on the Sneds Tour, which is a junior tour in Nashville, where both Blades and Brant call home. So I got some information from Brant about Blades and what he had to say and what he has said to him throughout his young career. And I'll read some of the comments. He said he's special. He's extremely focused. He's a very hard worker. He only wants to be a professional golfer and be the best he can be. He went on to say he's young in many ways. This is key. He's young in many ways when it comes to golf, but he has an old soul. Never seen a kid as driven to be the professional golfer like him. And I have to keep reminding myself he is only 18 years of age. So that speaks to the maturity and everything that he has absorbed. He's got Justin Parsons as his coach. So he's got a lot of good people around him. And he did show me a lot of maturity this week. This is his 10th tournament on the PGA Tour. So his feet are definitely wet on tour. But this was the first today, playing in the final group on the final day with the world's dominant player. I know he didn't play his best, but I can promise you he learned a lot today. He learned how to, you know, to watch Scottie Scheffler play. First off, when you play with him, you get to see how the best in the world does it. Secondly, you know, he probably, or he hopes, I'm sure, to be in this moment once again, whether it's on the PGA Tour or the Korn Ferry Tour, and he's going to be a lot more comfortable. And, you know, we learn a lot more from our failures and our successes. And I think he learned a lot today that's going to benefit him down the road. So this is a great step for him in his maturation and trying to be an elite player.
Now, you spoke with him on Friday, and I think you specifically asked the 18-year-old if he was tired, which I thought was an interesting question. But he admitted he was, and I don't want to overstate this, but how grueling is it to play 8 consecutive tournament rounds? He is 18 years old. He did fly a private jet, but he went from the Bahamas all the way out to Palm Springs. That has to take a toll, no?
Yeah, I think physically and mentally and emotionally, it was taxing. He kind of ran out of gas today. It's hard to measure that, obviously. But it was you could kind of tell that this moment you had to be mentally sharp, you had to be emotionally strong, and I think that it was challenging for him to do that today, given the fact that he was playing his 8th consecutive round in 8 days. But again, like I said, he's going to learn from this. He's strong. And he's 18. I can tell you what he did Friday night after nearly shooting 59. He went out with his dad and he ate a whole large pizza. And before he ate that entire large pizza, he had a nice quesadilla as an appetizer. Good to be 18. When guys are out here having spinach smoothies and eating lean protein, this kid's eating, you know, like a teenager, as he should.
As he should. The metabolism hasn't quite caught up with him.
Yeah.
I'm 38. I can confirm that it definitely does. Tilu, this was your first week out on the road with the PGA Tour this year. What are guys in the range? What are guys in the scrum? What are they talking about?
Oh, man. Well, there's a lot they're talking about. I think the most pinnacle thing they're talking about is the schedule coming up. What's the PGA Tour schedule going to look like as soon as 2027? Where am I going to be playing? How many events am I going to be playing? I talked to Adam Scott. And Adam Scott's a key figure, by the way, in the world of golf. He's on the PGA Tour Policy Board. He's on PGA Tour Enterprise his board of directors. He's on the Future Competition Committee, and that committee is shaping this new schedule that Brian Rolapp, the CEO of the PGA Tour, wants. And you know, he's very busy. He's very busy off the golf course. But the schedule, I think, is what they're concerned about, or and what they want to get as much information as they possibly can. I talked to Adam, and he really said we're creeping towards clarity, but we're not there yet. There have been reports that a schedule may come out as soon as March or April. Adam feels that that's ambitious. It'll probably come later, but we shall see. But I think that's the most talked about thing on the range. Brooks Koepka coming back at Torrey Pines this week. I mean, that's getting some rumbles as well. I talked to several players. I'm going to say the majority of the membership here. And I would say a large majority of them are in favor of him coming back, given the conditions that the PGA Tour put out. He's not going to have equity. He can't be in signature events immediately. He's not taking the spot away. That's key from a player in a tournament. But we shall see how that all unfolds. But right now, it's schedule Brooks Koepka. I think Brooks Koepka will get a lot more attention this week. And then after we settle in that he's back on tour, it's back to everybody talking about the schedule.
All right, Todd, you're heading across the mountains tonight, heading straight to Torrey Pines to get on that beat. Brooks Koepka will be making his first start next week. I'll be getting on a plane tomorrow morning to meet you there Monday afternoon. What are your expectations for Brooks coming back, playing a regular PGA Tour event after all this time?
It's a good question, Rex. I don't know. I don't really want to have expectations. I just want to kind of have it unfold. I mean, you know, I don't know if the tour wants Brooks to have some humility, which he very well may. But Brooks, at the same time, we know we've covered him enough. You know, he's a very proud person as well. So I don't know how this is all going to, you know, come to. I mean, Tuesday is going to be obviously a big day when he has his press conference and talks to the media. But I think the most interesting moments, and I don't know if it'll be on the range, on the course, or probably be behind closed doors in a locker room or somewhere else, are those one-on-one interactions that he says he wants to have with players. Most of the elite players are welcoming him back. Most of them are. I haven't heard any a top 30 player that I've talked to say, you know, I'm not so sure I like Brooks coming back. It's the, quote, middle class out here, the rank and file. I'm interested to see how they feel about Brooks Koepka coming back. But, you know, we're all going to see it all unfold in front of us in just days.
Yeah, Tilo, not to put you on the spot, but when Brooks talks to the media on Tuesday, I'm sure you'll have an interview with him as well for Golf Central, yep. Golf Today, and Golf Channel at large. What's one thing that you really want to ask him? I hope I'm not putting you on the spot here, but what's something that's been burning top of mind since this came out that Brooks Koepka, first of all, wanted to come back to the PGA Tour, and then, of course, he was reinstated with the returning member program?
I think it's pretty simple. It's like, why did you dislike LIV so much that you want, and why did you want to come back to the PGA Tour so badly? It's just, you know, give you, just as simple as that. Why the pivot? And I'm interested to hear what he says. You know, I don't know if he will say that what weighed in his decision to come back is his regrets in leaving the tour, or he just say he saw the product on LIV and it just wasn't for him, and he didn't feel like he could be as competitively sharp, or maybe as a combination of both. But it's just simple as that. Why did you pivot after somebody who, you know, decided that this was the best thing for him and his family?
All right, buddy, I'm going to get you out of here on this one. The idea that it's been a long week. This is your first week back. It takes you a little bit to knock the rust off, just like the PGA Tour players. However, you actually had a really, really bad start to the week. Let's go ahead and run this. This is actually Exhibit A, I think.
Long and powerful he has been against the last 3 to 4 seasons. Look, Scotty Scheffler just hit me with a ball, threw a golf ball at me. This guy right here. Hey, get it. I know many defense lawyers I could call. That hurt, by the way. Anyway, Scottie Scheffler's got an opportunity for another great week as he continues his strong presence on the PGA Tour. I'm going to go put some ice on my hip. Guys, I'll send it back to you. Ow, that really
did hurt. Not the
workman's comp, my goodness.
Not the bravest soul out there. I'm sure that...
Heart of a lion, Todd.
How are you feeling, Tilo? How are you feeling after this?
Well, let me just say that I am so glad that he was 6 inches to the left and hit my hip, because he was in a zone there where I could have doubled over.
That would have been much better television.
What do you mean? What do you mean? I don't understand.
Because he could have got me where you don't want to be hit as a man.
Okay, I understand.
Secondly, I mean, obviously it was unexpected. I think in hindsight, what I should have said is, you know, I could charge you for assault. Haven't you seen enough jail sales?
Oh. You've had some time to workshop that answer.
But
that's
you
good.
Didn't. You had a whole week to sit on that joke.
I was talking to you two, and, you know, I just got hit. What's going on? So, yeah, my mind wasn't as sharp at that very moment as it should have been. But, yeah, you know, Scotty's not as boring as you think. He's a lot of fun sometimes.
Well, Tilu, thanks as always for the time. I mean this very, very literally. Please drive safe to La Jolla and the Farmers Insurance Open. We may check back in with you next Sunday from Torrey Pines after what figures to be a very eventful week at Torrey. Enjoy the week in San Diego. Thanks, buddy.
Brian, you sound like my mom. I will drive safe. I'm not going over the mountain, by the way. I'm going around the mountain. So it may take
over
me
the
20
mountain.
Minutes longer.
It's a beautiful drive.
No, not at night. No. It's
drive.
Not at night. It's not. All right, guys. My pleasure.
All right, guys. After this short break, we'll break down Patrick Reed's win in Dubai and a couple other tidbits from the week. Stay with us. All right, Rexy, let's get out of here with some punch shots. And let's first start with Patrick Reed, the winner by 4 shots at the Dubai Desert Classic, a Rolex Series event on the European Tour, back inside the top 30 in the official world golf rank, which is pretty notable, I must say, for a player who does not earn any world ranking points by playing on LIV. You impressed by P. Reed?
Very impressed by P. Reed. And I think those points actually will get him into the years at majors, all 4 major championships. Obviously in the Masters as a past champion, but based on the timelines, the deadlines, what you can project out, unless he takes a plummet down the world ranking, it looks like he's locked up those other 3. Those are really big. I think it was a big week all the way around, actually, for LIV Golf. I think they had 4 players finish inside the top 20 in Dubai. That's the first Rolex victory for P. Reed. And I don't even want to say it's a victory for LIV. I think it just shows you the flexibility of golf right now and opens the door for the idea. We've talked a little bit about this, that if somehow LIV Golf does get world ranking points, either at the beginning of the season or throughout the season, and they seem to be trending in that direction when you hear Trevor Immelman, the chair of the official world golf ranking board, this could be huge, because essentially what P. Reed can do is take those points and spread them over to LIV Golf. So you can't discount what he did.
Yeah, I'm certainly impressed by Patrick Reed. He has always made a commitment to play on the DP World Tour. He's done so successfully. He said he's going to continue to accrue fines playing DP World Tour events by having the conflicting events on LIV. But he said, I'm going to continue to pay the fines. He earned about $1.5 million this past week in Dubai. All of a sudden, those fines are wiped away. So I'm not just impressed by him. I'm also, Rex, intrigued by him. Afterward, while talking to reporters, Patrick Reed said that he is a free agent, that he hasn't yet nailed down his LIV contract for 2026. It may just be a matter of dotting the I's and crossing the T's. It is hard to imagine at this point that he would go down a different route. But he did said if he was unable somehow to reach an agreement with LIV, he does have a little bit of leverage in this situation. He could play the European Tour in 2026 using his honorary membership. And by the way, if he finishes inside the top 10, in the race to Dubai standings, yes, those 10 players then earn their way onto the PGA Tour. Who knows what that would mean for suspensions? Would they welcome him back? Would he be banned for years on end? But that certainly was an intriguing route that he opened up, wasn't it, Rex?
And this goes back to the small print of the returning member program that the PGA Tour announced earlier this month. The idea that it was that program was specifically set up for 4 players who have either won the Players Championship or a major since 2022. Obviously, P. Reed won the Masters way back in 2018, so he wouldn't qualify for this. But we're a week away, essentially, from the February 2 deadline for those returning members to make the decision. There is nothing in the playbook that means that Rolap can't turn back around and say, you know what, we're going to open this up a little bit more. Let's say if you've won a major since 2018. Now, all of a sudden, it's a whole different conversation.
What
now,
if you only won it in 2018? Yes.
Yes. I mean, he can do. I think Brian Rolap has proven that he's pretty much going to do whatever he wants to do. But to your point, P. Reed loves to play a lot of golf, loves to play around the world. I don't think it would be the end of the world if he decided not to renew with LIV Golf and just focus on the DP World Tour. I think that fits in nicely with what he wants right now in his life.
I've always liked watching him play. Great set of hands. Congratulations to Patrick Reed. How about this story, Rex? Luke Donald met with the European Tour brass last week in Dubai. A decision on the 2027 European Ryder Cup captaincy expected to come in the next 6 weeks or so. What do you think will happen?
What's the decision? What are we talking about? What are we doing? I don't want to go full Stephen A. Smith here, but what are we doing? Why are we even having this conversation? Just give it to him for as many years as he wants to do it. If he hasn't proven to being a brilliant tactician, a brilliant captain, a brilliant motivator, he's done it twice now. He did it in Rome, then he did it at Bethpage under the most intense, most difficult conditions you can possibly come up for a Ryder Cup. What else does he have to do? I mean, I don't want to go Signetti here, but I mean, I think Luke just really needed to walk in the room and be like, Google me. Like, I don't know what to tell you, my man. Just Google me.
I win. It certainly does sound like it's Luke Donald's if he wants it. I think the question is, does he want it? Does he want to make the sacrifice again? He's already done it once, a road game back in 2023, a home game for him. But I say road game because he does live in Florida with his family. And so there are a little bit of travel sacrifices he would need to make going back and forth between Adair Manor and Ireland. I do think, Rex, like the allure of history will be too much to go overcome if you're Luke Donald. He'll be the first to win three consecutive Ryder Cups for a player who never got to number one in the world, who got to number one in the world, but never won a major championship. That's pretty special if you were able to count yourself as a three-time Ryder Cup winning captain. All right, Rex, you are off to San Diego to interview Brooks Koepka and the rest of the field at the Farmers Insurance Open. I asked Tilu this. What's a different question that you want to ask him? He's asking why. Are you asking what? How?
No, as soon as you asked Tilu that, I kind of registered the question I want to ask. Would you do it again? If I could put you in a time machine and you could go back in time and you could decide, okay, I want to take the big bag of money and I'm going to go do this and maybe mess with my legacy and not play the golf I want to play and not be comfortable over there, would you do it again? And in his heart of hearts, I'm guessing he's going to say no.
That is a great question. Look forward to hearing that one and plenty more on Tuesday when Brooks Koepka meets with the press. We're going to have a midweek podcast, as we always do, Rex and I, over on YouTube, wherever it is you get your podcast. In the meantime, you guys are the drill, golfchannel.com for all the latest news, notes, and updates. We'll talk to you guys in a couple of days.